All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this edition of It's Brewing at McEwen, a USF baseball podcast. Tonight is March 19th, 2025. It's around 8:10 p.m. right now. And as we are talking to you, the Bulls are in the top of the ninth inning on the road at Florida Gulf Coast. They are up 11-3 with Matt Buffington at the plate, two runners on base. Trying to maybe get up by 10 runs or so. Really good showing from the Bulls tonight. We've been watching leading up to this, but the broadcast has had a bit to be desired. Regardless, good to see the Bulls having success tonight. Tonight's show, we are going to recap these midweek games. We are going to kind of like reflect on the season so far because we're right at a point that is pretty significant in the season. Non-conference weekends are wrapping up. Every weekend, the rest of the season is conference play. So we're kind of just going to reflect on what we've seen on the Bulls so far, do some scouting of UAB, and which is our opponent this weekend in Birmingham. And then lastly, we'll give you some things to look out for across the AAC. As obviously, we want to start paying a little more attention to our conference opponents as we get into this part of the season here. But before we get into all that, I'm with my co-host John Kaplan. How are you doing tonight, John?
Not too bad, man. We're getting back-to-back nights of USF baseball and looking to close out the second win in two in as many nights here. Try to cap off a four-game winning streak. So
Yeah, it's
it's
been
a
really fun to see. Obviously, it was looking we had a rough go with Villanova, obviously, and it was interesting because we had Coach Hannes on the show right after that, which was probably the most difficult point of the season thus far. And one thing I really liked that he said was he was trying to help the guys like have fun, that week at practice. And like something he said was like, you can't go to hell every day. It's gonna burn you out, So he made an emphasis to make that week after Villanova a little more fun. I mean, it sounds like they were doing like, some kind of competitive just games for fun. I mean, you had Sebastian Greco playing shortstop in practice. I mean, if that's not fun, I don't know what is. They definitely got the vibes right, got the mindset right. Obviously, Matt and Adam already covered it, but we lost that night on Friday night, but then ended up winning the series, against the second time we did that against a Big Ten team this year. So really, really good stuff. And after that, last night, Florida Gulf Coast came into town. And the Bulls ended up winning that game by a score of 4-1. Some of the highlights of that at a very high level before we dive into it a little bit. Matt Brown, 5 innings, 1 earned run. Nolan Bernard, 2 innings, no runs. Jack Nedrow, 2 innings, no runs, a save. Really good to see those performances. Really good college debut for Victor Cartagena. John, when you think about last night, what stands out to you?
I want to say that last night I was impressed, hands down, by Matt Brown. We didn't, I think I'm not the only person who didn't know what to expect coming into this start. We knew we were going to need a lot of arms coming into this week with 5 games and 6 days, I believe, or 5 games and 7 days. And what he did was he just lit up the strike zone, He says, here's my best, try and hit it. And he put a lot of balls in play. Wasn't a big strikeout performance from anyone in our pitching staff last night. We saw a lot of batted balls, but good things happen when you depend on a great defense behind you. We saw a lot of really good stellar defense out in the field, and Matt Brown really kind of set the tone for the night. We got off to an early start with 4 runs in the first 3 innings. And then their FGCU's bullpen kind of came in and shut the door on us a bit, but we answered that with a bullpen of our own, and it rounded out a really good victory for us. Coming into tonight's game, I was definitely looking to see a little bit more hitting, and we got a much better offensive performance tonight than we did yesterday to kind of make it a well-balanced approach going up against a pretty good FGCU team. I mean, if you look at the records, they are not in our favor against FGCU, so it's good to get back on top of that series.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy to look back at the recent history. I mean, coming into the last night, we had lost, I think, five consecutive matchups against them, and we were 1-9 in the last 10. I mean, it feels really good to get back to back. Well, bottom nine, we're up 11-3, but let's assume back to back wins. Yes, you mentioned Matt Brown, and he's a guy that we're pretty familiar with. We watched him all last season. We seen him make a few outings this season. Ever since we saw him play as a bull, I was always intrigued by the arm, by the size. He has good velocity, and which comes pretty naturally at his size, bigger guy. The last year, he just had a lot of ups and downs, kind of struggled with his control. But I always thought last season, I was like, man, if he could just get his control under wraps, he could be really effective because the stuff is plenty good enough. This season, his first three outings all came in relief, or he may have missed a start. I think they were all in relief. But again, he actually looked improved from last year. His control, I could already tell, was getting a little better from last year.
I
And
agree.
I felt like he was really close to having a good outing, and to see it all come together last night, five innings. And speaking of control, he only walked one batter. And no hit by pitches. Yeah, that was awesome. So congrats to Matt Brown to having a great outing like that. And if he can continue to pitch like that and be like a legitimate fourth starter for this team, that really elevates the ceiling of this team
I'll tell
as
you what,
well.
though, that'll really come into play on those conference series that are away, because Bryce, until the end of April, he's not going to be able to travel for many of the away series. So that's really going to be huge, having a bunch of arms stretched out to the point where we can get 4 to 5 good innings out of them. And Matt Brown, I just want to say it, way to put on for Canada, kid. I mean, just really impressive.
Yeah, that was awesome. Another big storyline from last night's game was the first collegiate start for Victor Cartagena. He started in right field, and he is a sophomore who only had one at bat as a freshman last year at Indiana State. Came down here with Coach Hannes. Had not played much yet for us. We definitely have a pretty stacked outfield. With a lot of seniors and upperclassmen, but the sophomore on a midweek game last night was able to get his first start for the Bulls and did not waste any time at all to make his name known. Amazing catch in right field, running to his left towards the foul line, diving catch. I mean, it was not just your average diving catch. This was a really exceptional play. He also His first at bat, he had a sacrifice fly that nearly left the yard to deep left center field, drove in an RBI. And then he also got his first collegiate hit in his next at bat, which also drove in a run. So can't really ask for a better college debut. What do you think of seeing Victor Cartagena last night?
I think it's worth noting that the wind is always blowing in from left field at the Red. When he hit that ball, I thought it was gone for sure. And you really hit all the points that I wanted to hit. He's flashing some range out in the outfield, and you can tell that he's just comfortable out there, which is awesome to see because he hasn't had that many outings for us. He hasn't. I think that was his debut was yesterday. So, honestly, it was comfortable to see. It was good to see him comfortable with the bat in his hands. Good to see him make some plays out in the field, and he got his first base hit on a single down the line that got gloved by the third baseman. But he showed some hustle and beat out for his first college single for USF. So I'm excited to see a little bit more of him. It's going to be a hard, it's going to be a hard outfield to etch his name into, but good to see that we have a little bit of variety out there.
Yeah, I could definitely see him getting some looks maybe against left-handed pitchers, given how many lefties we have in the outfield. Want to give a guy a day off, platoon a little bit here and there. He's definitely earned some consideration for that. Looking at the box score from last night's game, is there any other things that you observed offensively that you'd want to point out?
Sebastian Greco had a couple loud outs to couple with the I think he got his first base hit in the third inning. It was a screamer to right field, but Greco just staying hot. Ryan Pruitt had some really loud outs, but from an offensive standpoint, there just really wasn't a lot to write home about. I think Mayo's riding a 3 or 4 game hit streak. Brad Killorey's starting to get the bat going, which is something that this offense could desperately use. And you know, I'm just liking to see, you know, the hits spread out throughout our lineup, and it's not just coming from 2 to 3 spots. You know, once all of those bats get going in the same direction, it's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, no, I really like a couple things I saw even last night, even though we only had 7 hits as a team. A couple of nice timely hits. I mean, Carlos Hakame getting an RBI base hit. Rafael Betancourt, who had generally kind of been struggling at the plate in the beginning of the season, but honestly, the last 2 or 3 games I've seen him in, he looks better. He looks more comfortable. He had an RBI base hit last night as well. So a few positives from last night. Offensively, and then just to cap off last night, really liked what we saw getting Jack Nedrow back out there. Obviously, I think it was 2 outings ago for him. He had that rough start where he had to leave in the first inning. But I think he may have had a short relief appearance since then, or was that his first appearance since
No,
then?
he had a, I think he had a 2-inning relief appearance that
Even
would,
before this one?
yeah.
Okay.
Because I remember him seeing him respond really well. It was either 1 inning or two, but he got out of it no runs. And then today or last night, he just looked really good. He pitches to contact, you know, so he had a couple loud outs here and there, but he got, I think he mixed 2 Ks in there. So he was looking really comfortable and glad to see that, you know, those stints at the starting position didn't really wear on him too bad. And then you had Nolan Bernard. I mean, this kid's just super talented. He's got like a 3 to 4 pitch arsenal that most of the time he's got really good control of. I think he leads the team in hit by pitches, but he's effectively wild, we'll say, because that ERA is coming way down for him, you know, and he's really proven to be a key cog in our bullpen. He's still really young, and I'm really excited to see what he can bring to the team moving forward.
Yeah, and you made a good observation today when you were rewatching the game and mentioned his splitter. And I had to look that up on Twitter, and there was a scout that had seen him back in September, only about 6 months ago, actually, talking about his 4-pitch mix, and the splitter was one of the pitches mentioned, and he used that very effectively last night to get that strikeout. At the end of the 7th inning, I think he got 2 straight swing and misses on that pitch. So yeah, really exciting stuff from the freshman. So with that, we'll kick it to tonight's game as we're still following it. It's getting a little hairier than I thought. What the heck? All right, bottom nine.
So Cal Punsack is coming in trying to reel things in a little bit, and
Okay.
the Eagles offense is going wings up against them a little bit, but we'll see if Cal can't, you know, put a cap on this and get us back on the bus.
All right. We're gonna keep talking about this game under the assumption we end up winning, right? So, as we've watched tonight's game, let's talk about some things that happened earlier in the evening. Matt Goldenbaum, the redshirt freshman, made his first start as a Bull.
Two hitless innings.
Two innings, no runs. We know he's explosive too. I mean, when he made his debut at the Red, the announcer said he was up to like 94, 95. So to see him be able to control that, rein that in his first collegiate start, no walks, no hits.
I was about to say, I didn't think he gave up a hit.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. He could have just let him in the whole game. He would throw a no-hitter.
Right.
We saw Alex Sanchez enter in relief. He struggled, pitched one third of an inning, had to be relieved by Aiden Longoria, who it was really nice to see him have a good outing. He had been struggling for a little bit after an incredible start to the season. I'm really happy to see him rein it in a little bit because he's really nasty. You know, he's got that new arm slot, moving the ball well in both directions, arm side and across his body with a slider. And to see him get one and a third tonight, no earned runs, really like that. Although he did get hit in the hand,
Yeah, it was cut short.
yeah, he could have done longer, man. He could have done longer. I think he was looking good. So hopefully that's just a minor bruise and we see him back out there very soon.
If I had to guess, it was probably on the outside part of like his, it looked like the palm near his pinky and his ring finger. 'Cause then when you saw him take warm up pitches, everything was escaping
Yes,
arm
arm
side.
side,
So I
yeah.
don't think that he was fully able to grip, and that really, really hurts. So I do hope that he for a quick recovery for Aiden for sure.
Yeah, definitely. After Aiden, we got to see Corbin Little, which was really cool. I mean,
Yeah.
we hadn't seen that man pitch for the Bulls since 2023. And we're talking like 2 years. That was awesome to see the perseverance for him. Spent all of last season redshirting, recovering from his arm injury. Finally was able to get back on the mound today. Pitched one and a third, and it was on very short notice. He was the guy that had to come in when Aiden got hurt. And man, not only did he put up good numbers, one and a third, no runs, one hit, two strikeouts, but you want to talk about the eye test with him. I really liked what I saw from him. I mean, control looked really easy for him. And the curveball, especially against left-handed batters, that's going to be really effective for him. And this team really needs more left-handed arms, just given the fact we just don't have very many out of the bullpen. I think up until Corbin made his debut, we only had two bullpen lefties pitch all year. That was Brandon Keister and Cal Punsack. So to get a third one in there is tremendous. So awesome return for Corbin and hope to see that continue. And then we also got to see James Hill, who has looked pretty solid ever since he had a rough outing a couple weeks ago on a Saturday start. He gives us three innings, no runs, three strikeouts. Love to see that. And then, do you have an update on the current game, John?
I just watched Cal Punsack. His ears were burning a bit because now he's got two outs. He just struck out Harrison Povey, the best hitter on FGCU's lineup, and I was definitely asking for a first base review on a check swing. Sorry about that.
Okay. I got the live stats up. I got a 2-1 count. Two outs, runners on first and second. So just a couple more strikes there, Cal, and we'll be able to call this final. But yeah, so he's on the mound right now. That's actually the last pitcher I was going to mention. Good to see him getting back out there, and you know, hopefully he can wrap that up. But on the offensive side of things, man, 13 hits for us tonight. We have 11 runs, and the leader of this very active offensive night is none other than Marcus Brodell, who was batting in the seven hole today. He looked good right from the jump, man. That backside double, two RBI double early in the game. Love that. What do you think about offense tonight, John?
Brodell obviously didn't take kindly to sitting out yesterday. That first ball he hit, we've been talking about the broadcasts for FGCU. You don't get a view of left field or right field ever, but the way he looked at it and the way it came off the bat, I thought it was going to go. But no, Brodell's been red hot. Pruitt getting back on the right side of the scorecard, and Jackson Mayo with two hits today. And again, Brad Keelory also continuing to stay hot. I think those are all the multi-hit games for the Bulls today. But altogether, I mean, whenever you can notch, despite some opinions, whenever you can notch double-digit hit counts and at any level, it's a good day in baseball for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. Love to see that. Also a really nice second start of the season for Matt Buffington. I saw him throw out a runner trying to steal third. He also is 1 for 3 with an RBI. One that hit was a double, also has drawn a walk. So good night for him. Yeah, no, really, really nice offensive night for the Bulls. So when this game is final, I will definitely say that. But in the meantime, we will jump to our next segment, which is kind of just state of the team. Let's just reflect on what we have seen thus far this season from the Bulls. It's been a fun season, to say the least. You know, we started the season with that series win against Iowa. Played Florida State close, going up to Georgia Southern, a really solid mid-major team. Winning that series on the road was awesome. A nice little two-game stretch where you beat FIU and then run rule UCF. And then we got into the one, let's say, lull of the season, right? One point that is kind of like where you really get to see what is this team made out of? You know, what is this coaching staff, the players, the whole unit, you know, how are they going to respond to adversity, to a challenging time? I mean, getting run ruled back-to-back nights by UCF, who obviously is a great team. They've done the same thing to SEC teams, so nothing to be ashamed about. We did end up winning a game on that Friday night against Villanova, 3-2. From a good Corey Braun start. But then you end up losing the series to Villanova, which you just don't want to see that. Granted, they are having a good season. They have like the second best record in the Big East right now. And they just won their series last weekend, too. So, I mean, they've actually won, I want to say, almost like all their series this year, except for their season opening tournament in Puerto Rico. So they're actually a pretty solid club. But if you count losing two to Villanova and losing the opening game to Maryland, we had lost 5 out of 6 games. And, you know, you could say, wow, you know, the Bulls are really struggling, whatever. Well, what really turned the tide was the following day against Maryland, when Bryce Archie kind of came in there after Brandon Keister gave us a good start and just closed that game, got the Bulls a one-run victory. And the tide has really turned since then, beating Maryland 15-8 that Sunday, beating Florida Gulf Coast 4-1 last night. Still trying to win this game. Oh my gosh. Oh man. Bottom nine, 2 outs, 11-5. Landon Yorick has entered in relief. Okay. So that's happening right now.
We had Coach on after that Villanova series, and you said how he kind of, you know, tried to keep it light and keep it fun, you know, at the practice the following week to help the guys rebound and stuff. And one other thing that I noticed though is that, you know, that's the first time we've ever heard Coach say, "I'm unhappy with how we looked." You know, it like he said on air, you know, that he was not happy with our showing against Villanova. And it really kind of was good to see us turn around and beat a top 100 RPI school in Maryland right after that, because I believe that's the week that we're playing that makeup game right now, where we were supposed to have FGCU in between Nova and Maryland here. But then, you know, the rough loss for Corey Braun, and then a couple other things that he mentioned for potential for the weekend starts was putting De Cardenas and Bryce Archie in the back end. And Mark, that really paid dividends. You saw that on both Saturday and Sunday. You know, You mentioned Keister's start on Saturday, but Decard, I think it was Decardenas that came in on Saturday, and then it was
Archie Saturday and then DeCardenas finished Sunday. Yeah.
thank you. Yeah. So I mean, both of them going extended innings and just really slamming the door. It's gonna be interesting seeing what kind of strategy we go into conference play with, but he held true to his word, and it really paid off. And USF just won 11-5 in real time.
Sweet.
The game is officially over. But yeah, no, I'm excited to see that. And also, while he may have tried to keep it light, I think the guys definitely picked up on the some other vibes that he was putting down too, that like this kind of stretch is not really acceptable, and we need to get back to our brand of baseball.
Yeah, I really think that, what he did really, really worked. It's interesting too, like the moment that he told us on Thursday last week that he was gonna start Brandon Keister and go for long relief, I was like, whoa, you just like flipped everything on its head, and I love that because we needed that. We were struggling. So if you're struggling, what's one of the most important things in the sport of baseball is making adjustments. You make adjustments as an individual player, you make adjustments as a coach. And I love seeing him make those adjustments. I think that was awesome. And it works. And you're right, we don't really know if that's exactly what the plan is against UAB this weekend. But it could be, it might not be. And like you said, we may not have Bryce Archie, so it's good that we have multiple guys stepping up. But yeah, I think generally speaking, I mean, so with this win tonight, that improves us to 11-8. I think so. Yeah, 11-8. That's awesome. Especially considering the stretch they went through with the six games, only winning one out of those six earlier. And now we head into a challenging series to start AAC play. UAB is a good team. They have a 14-7 record. They've kind of cooled off a little bit of late. They've lost four out of their last five, but again, 14-7 overall is really good. They're led by a fourth-year head coach, Casey Dunn. And last year was the first year that they actually played in the AAC. They made it to the conference tournament. They finished in fifth place out of 10 teams. Not bad. 26-29 overall. That guy, Casey Dunn's a really good coach. He built some really good teams at Samford, which is even a kind of a smaller school in Alabama, still Division One. He had been a coach there for like 18 or 19 years. Moved over to UAB, doing a good job. But just at a very high level, before we kind of get into just some players to look out for, UAB, their team is built pretty similarly to ours. Offensively, they're not really a power team. I think they have the least home runs of any team in the AAC with eight as a team. Sebastian Greco almost has that by himself. Their team OPS though, 779, which is pretty close to ours. It was 773 coming into tonight. It's probably better now. But they know how to score runs. They have the fourth most runs scored per game of any team in the AAC, 7.15. So they what how they manufacture those runs without having a lot of power, they have a lot of guys that can get on base. They draw walks, they steal bases. They are tied with us for the most stolen bases in the conference. So they get active on the base pass. They have patient professional at bats. I mean, they're well coached. They may not have the most size and power, but they're well coached. They take good at bats and they make the most out of their base runners. Defensively, they have fielding percentage 975, exactly like ours, 974, one of the better defenses in the league. One of their issues on defense, though, is they have a very hard time controlling the running game. They've allowed 20 out of 24 stolen base attempts to be successful. That's an 83% success rate. That's the worst in the AAC, which aligns pretty well with what we like to do, which is get active on the base pass. So there's some opportunity there. And on the contrary, we as a team have the best stolen base defense. We've only allowed a 55% success rate. So that's really good to see. Last component of UAB's team, obviously, is their pitching. They're pretty middle of the pack in the AAC in most metrics, but their team ERA of 4.71 is pretty good. They have the lowest strikeouts per nine innings of any team in the league. So they definitely are not really big on stuff. They are more of a team that wants to let you put the ball in play and utilize their defense to get through games and to try to get wins. They don't walk a lot of batters. So again, they're kind of like a just a well-coached, well solid execution team. They may not have the most talent offensively, but they do have some very talented pitchers. John, just hearing about this team at the high level, like we just talked about, like what are your impressions of this team and how do you think we match up with them?
I think we match up pretty well with them. I think that before taking a deeper dive into looking at what their roster and schedule consisted of, I think I was a little bit more intimidated going into this series than I am now. They have a 14-7 record, but their strength of schedule is outside of the top 100. They've pretty much played every school in Alabama to start the season. You know, with a home and home against Troy, which is remarkable because, I mean, Troy has a very good baseball team. But then, you know, you look at South Alabama, you look at North Alabama, and then a game against Auburn. You know, so I mean, just in that little excerpt right there, that mentions some of the better teams that they've played. They're coming off of a Middle Tennessee State series where they or Middle Tennessee University, excuse me. Where they lost 2 of 3 and they sit at the close to like the 200 mark for RPI thus far this season. So it's kind of tough to get a real grasp on where this team is at. I'm sure we'll have a much better idea come Sunday evening, but I think that if we can continue to do the small things right, stick to fundamentals, stay disciplined, continue to see pitches up there and stay aggressive when the situation calls for it. You know, just staying true to our game. If we can get decent pitching outings, I think we should be able to take 2 of 3, if not sweep UAB, because I really like this team riding high into that series right now. But it is worth noting that UAB is 8-2 at home, so they do prefer to play in Birmingham, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think, you know, I agree with you. I'm kind of looking at it in a similar way where I don't think that like they don't present a super like intimidating lineup from a sense of like, you know, they're gonna bash the ball all over the yard. But what's kind of scary about them is just the fact that they're fundamentally sound and they execute well. All the important stats like minimizing walks from a pitching standpoint, drawing walks from an offensive standpoint, stealing bases, they do all those things well. The one thing to exploit statistically is the fact that they don't control the running game that well. I'm interested to see how we you know attack that. But what I will say is pretty interesting about their team when you look at their starting pitchers for this weekend. I actually have access on d1baseball.com to some advanced batted ball statistics, and you could see the ground ball rates for pitchers. And three of the top six pitchers in the AAC for ground ball rate are on UAB. Like their pitchers induce ground balls at like a crazy high rate. I mean, if you can induce ground balls at like a 50% rate or more, you're above average. But they have two of their starters for this weekend are doing it at a 60% rate or higher, which is like top two in the league.
Wow.
So they know how to keep the ball down in the zone. They know how to miss barrels. They're not necessarily a big strikeout crew. But looking at who they're going to be throwing out there against us on Friday night, they're probably going to put out Cole Cheatham, who is a left-handed pitcher. He's a senior. He transferred in there from Mississippi State. He is a power guy for them. He throws up to 94 miles per hour. He has five pitches. But he actually, oddly enough, even though he's the Friday night guy, he has the worst statistics of the three starters. He has a 6 ERA, which is again not bad. 25 strikeouts and 10 walks. So he's out of the three pitchers, he's the one that's maybe struggled with his control the most, although that's not terrible. But my concern is just the fact that we have to go up against another powerful lefty, given the fact we have a lot of left-handed bats in our lineup. And we pitched at Mississippi State, so he's got the SEC talent. He's a good player, obviously. Interested to see, maybe do we platoon? Do we bring in a couple extra right-handed bats on Friday night? Maybe we'll do that. Maybe you see Cartagena play again. So that's Friday night. Saturday, we're looking at arguably their best player on their team, maybe. I don't know why he's not the Friday night starter. Maybe they like to start things off with a powerful throwing lefty, but Colin Daniel is the right-handed pitcher junior. He was the D1 baseball preseason player pitcher of the year coming into this year, and he's living up to the hype. He has a 2.76 ERA. He has thrown 29 and a third innings, 29 strikeouts, only 9 walks. He's holding opponents to a 206 batting average and inducing ground balls at a 63% rate. He doesn't throw particularly hard. He's got a 90 mile per hour fastball, a plus slider, and a changeup he could show. He'll be a challenging matchup. Not like crazy high with strikeouts, but obviously this guy knows how to pitch. We'll have to be opportunistic with him. And then the last guy before I get your thoughts on this, John, is Chase Ingram, right-handed pitcher. He's a junior. We'll see him on Sunday. And oddly enough, he has the best ERA of the three starters. He has a 2.25 ERA, 28 innings, 22 strikeouts, also induces ground balls at a pretty high clip at 52%. Very good control. But generally speaking, he's hittable. Is 265 batting average against. That is the starting rotation for them this weekend. John, upon kind of processing that, what are your thoughts on that?
It'll be interesting to see how we show up against his, is it Chatham, Cheatham,
Yeah. The lefty.
whoever, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how we show up against him just because of our metrics against lefties. We tend to struggle a bit against lefties, but like we were talking about earlier, if we stay disciplined and, see pitches make it difficult on him, hopefully we can, cut his night short. But one thing I do know about Colin Daniel is that he was tabbed with AAC Pitcher of the Week earlier in I believe earlier this month. He he strung together a few good outings for them, and he's been really interesting to watch. And like you said, Chase Ingram leading the squad in ERA. You the weekend is going to be tough on our Bulls, but hopefully we can get to him early.
Yeah, and that's another interesting thing too, is I looked at their bullpen just at a high level, and what's interesting about what they do is they don't really have that many guys who pitch. Like they really kind of like to keep everything really consolidated. What they want to do is they want to have like their starter do 5 or 6 innings and then have their reliever finish the last 3 or 4. In the ideal world for them, it's like they only use two pitchers the whole day. So they have several guys that are stretched out. That's what it looks like that they did in their previous games recently. They have like 3 or 4 guys in the bullpen that have good stats and are effective and can pitch multiple innings. So it's really going to be, can you disrupt the flow of this pitching staff? Can you knock them off their game plan? Can you knock out a guy in the third or fourth inning instead of having to go 5 or 6, make them use extra pitchers that are further down their depth chart that they're not as anxious to use. So again, one thing I'll say about all three of these guys is they all are really good and effective, but none of them are really striking batters out at like an above average rate, really. They all pitch to contact, which, given the fact that the Bulls have some good athleticism, we have some good speed, potential to beat out even infield singles in some cases, bunt singles. It's going to be, I think, coming down to, we may have to play some small ball, may have to execute things like that, and maybe these games end up being a little lower scoring. And that could play into our hands because our pitching staff of late has really stepped up, and that could work out for us. But before we kick it to our last segment, I will highlight a couple of their hitters. Again, I mentioned before that they don't really have much power, and their best hitter is a guy who plays third base and bats cleanup, has incredible stats, but doesn't really have much pop. He's batting 449. He's got a 1,095 OPS, zero home runs. His isolated slugging is below 100, which basically means he does not hit very many extra base hits. But he's a transfer from JUCO. His name is Todd Clay. You'll probably see him play third and bat fourth, right-handed bat. Obviously, batting 449 is insane. So this dude clearly has very high level bat to ball skills to be able to hit at that average in Division One. Little Luis Arraez kind of skill set there.
Exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah. And then the other two best offensive players for them are Logan Braunschweig. He's their center fielder. You'll see him at the top of their batting order. And like most center fielders, he has good speed. He's stolen 13 out of 14 bases. He's hitting 364. He leads the team in home runs with two. He's got 1,000 OPS, which is nothing to laugh about there. And then the third best hitter is Tyler Waugh. He's a left fielder. They bat him usually like sixth or seventh. He's hitting 326 with a 927 OPS, and he's got a home run. So that's kind of the offensive players to look out for. A couple outfielders, third baseman, obviously other players on their team as well, but none that really jump off of the stat sheet offensively. But I'll kick it to the last segment here. And John, I'll kick it over to you really quick. I mean, we've been watching the AAC together now for like the last 3 or 4 years as we've been doing brewing. And it's been like a little bit disappointing almost to see like how the AAC was kind of in a free fall for a bit. I mean, I don't think in any of our years covering the league did we ever see three NCAA tournament teams. It was always conference champion, conference tournament champion, and ECU at large. Conference tournament champion, ECU at large, which basically is a reflection on the fact that the league was not doing very well. It just wasn't. But this year looks different. It really, really does. Up until last night, we were the number one ranked mid-major league in the country. Out of the 25 mid-major leagues, even keep in mind that there are 29 conferences in Division One baseball, and obviously everybody knows about the Power Four. That's your football Power Four, essentially. But to be the best mid-major league, essentially the fifth best league in Division One baseball, that's a big deal. Unfortunately, the Southland League passed us up last night because they had two teams pull off some incredible upsets: Eastern Tennessee State beating Tennessee, Mercer beating Florida State. And as I reference these rankings, I'm referencing the RPI rankings from warrennolan.com, which is a good source for the RPI, which is the, I forget what it stands for, but essentially is what the NCAA selection committee uses when picking their at-large teams for the NCAA tournament. So obviously, we want to track that closely. From my experience, you have to see a team kind of like be in the top 40 to have a chance to get picked at large into the NCAA tournament. Right now, we sit at number 69, which is, and actually, we might be higher after beating Florida Gulf Coast tonight. But John, I wanted to get your thoughts on having a better AAC. How have you seen that play out so far this year?
So for starters, RPI, I believe, is rating percentage index, just for clarification. But
Thank you.
no, you're all good. But no, this season, I mean, you look at teams like Florida Atlantic and UTSA at the top of the conference, and where is Memphis, where is East Carolina? You got to scroll down, a little ways. That's a big change for this the general makeup of this conference. It's East Carolina and everybody else for the most part in years past. But I think there's only we have two total teams that are sub five or below 500 right now, in Wichita State and Rice. But Charlotte is at the bottom at 10-9, Memphis at 11-9, we're at 11-8, East Carolina 12-9, UAB 14-7, and FAU at the top is 17-4, UTSA 17-6, Tulane 15-6. I mean, that's pretty stout. RPI generally doesn't have a whole lot of bearing this early on in the season, but how many teams do we have inside of the top 100 RPI right now? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I think we have at least four or five, which is a big upgrade from where we've been in the past.
Something to watch, as the season, moves forward, especially as we get into conference play, because conference play can be really ugly. And I mean, just kind of like a bloodbath essentially between these schools. Reminds me of the old school NFC East days, where we just beat up on each other, game in and game out. So it's going to be really, really interesting. And I'm hoping that Coach Hannes has something to offer.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think he's gonna make his presence well known in this league as he already has with the bull with the guys. And what's interesting is our matchup this weekend after the games played out tonight. We have moved up to number 64 in the RPI, and UAB is number 65. So going on the road to a team that is in the top 65. You can win at least two of those. We could see ourselves creeping up into the top 60, maybe top 55 with a sweep, and pushing closer and closer to that coveted top 40, which gives you a relatively decent chance of an at-large NCAA tournament selection. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. Thinking about like the league as a whole. I think that if you look at all the matchups, which is this is the first weekend of conference play, I think we have the marquee matchup, two teams in the top 100, number 65 at 64, 64 at 65. But one that I'm going to keep an eye on, even though on paper it doesn't look like the best matchup, is Rice, who is obviously having a really bad season, at FAU, who's arguably the best team in our league right now. So worst at best, but there's a twist. You throw in Mr. David Pierce into the equation, one of the best coaches in college baseball of the last decade, who is going to be taking over the team middle of the season after he was let go at the Texas for the Texas Longhorns last year. Started this season as a bench coach at Texas State. Gets the phone call from Rice mid-season, and he will be in the dugout in Boca Raton, dressed in Rice dark blue, representing the Owls. And who knows what's going to happen, man? I mean, a coach can make a world of difference. As we've already seen this season, a coach can really put some energy and life into a team. I would not be surprised if Rice wins at least a game in Boca Raton. And it wouldn't be, I mean, who knows, man? It's just going to be interesting. I'm gonna have a close eye on it. FAU is extremely solid. I mean, realistically, they should sweep Rice given how good that they are. But who knows? The
One
three other
game that I'm watching
matchups.
this
Go
weekend,
ahead.
sorry, one game that I'm watching is the Memphis at East Carolina.
Yeah.
Memphis has been pretty scrappy this year to start. I was watching a early game of them earlier today. They were on early this afternoon against Lipscomb. They were struggling a bit, but I think they ended up getting the W in that one. But the game was getting away from them early. But Memphis at East Carolina is really the only other game, in my opinion, that has any sort of eye appeal. What do you think?
Yeah, it does. And what's interesting too is like East Carolina, like their RPI right now is like 110, which is way below where they normally are. But when I was doing some of the stats today to kind of prep for the show, I was looking at like the conference in general. And even though East Carolina's record isn't that hot right now, like they're playing better lately. I want to say they're 7-3 in their last 10. They have arguably the two of the best starting pitchers in the league on paper, statistically. Their offense is showing more power than it has in years past. They're hitting home runs. They quietly might be a lot better than their RPI. But we will see how that shakes out, right? I mean, they're hosting Memphis. So if they are as good as I think they are, they should win that series, maybe even sweep it. But you're right, Memphis has been scrappy. They're pitching well this season. They could give ECU a run for their money. The other two series are UTSA at Charlotte. UTSA has been one of the best representatives of our league this year. I think beating Texas actually in a midweek a couple of days ago.
Yep.
So they're a fun team. Charlotte is playing decent. They're above 500. And the last series is Wichita State at Tulane. Again, it's the AAC. I think anything could happen. But we will kind of keep an eye on all of that. But I think that is everything we had for tonight's show. John, any closing thoughts?
No, let's go get him at Birmingham.
Awesome. Yeah, so thank you everybody for listening. Make sure you tune in to the Bulls this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Birmingham. All games will be live on ESPN Plus. Make sure you're following myself and John and the rest of the Bruin crew on X. We will always give you live updates about what's going on with the games. And if you're enjoying our show, please be sure to follow us on whichever platform. On Apple Podcasts, I think in the top right corner, you hit the plus follow. Spotify, there's a way to do that. But this really helps us to grow this show and to get this content out to more people and to help create more USF baseball fans, which is what we are trying to do. So, with that, I'm signing off for John Clapham and myself, and have a good night and go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.